The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good evening, everyone. Is the volume adequate, loud enough for everyone out there? Sorry? Is there things on the hearing system devices, the other people who are using them? Can you hear on that? Because sometimes it's... Can you hear now? Is it working for your? Yeah, it's working for them. It's working for theirs. It's working for them.
On those areas,
that doesn't seem to be working.
Oh. Somewhere.
I may have been ahead of you.
Robert, is it working?
So is it working for you now? Great. So in these ancient texts that somehow managed to be preserved for 2,500 years, like there's one of them, it's a pretty big book. It's called The Connected Discourses of the Buddha. And they purport to be records of conversations the Buddha had. And this one is, I'm going to read a couple of lines from one. It's a poem that is a conversation that's put in poetry in two verses. One person says one verse and the Buddha says the other. And so the person says, What should one not give who loves the good? What should one not give if one loves what is good? What should a mortal not relinquish? What shouldn't you give up? And so here's the answer. A person should not give oneself away. One should not relinquish oneself. So it's kind of a provocative. There's a footnote where the ancient commentary says what this means. You don't give yourself away to become a slave. In the ancient world, they had slaves. If you love the good, you don't give yourself away. But in the modern world, we don't have, for the most part, in our right around these environs, slaves in the classic sense. But we probably have a lot of slaves in a modern sense of people who are enslaved by their work, enslaved by their technology, by certain pursuits, by fame, by money, all kinds of things that people are caught up in. And in doing so, sometimes people lose themselves. And it's not uncommon for people to go on meditation retreats because they feel so lost from themselves, so disconnected, and they go there to find themselves. And they sit and do nothing but be quiet, sit for hours at a time, do a walking meditation for hours at a time, not talk to anyone, and do this contemplative period where slowly some of the agitation of the mind settles away and the crusts of the heart fall away and they feel like they're finally back in touch with themselves. And for sometimes it feels like such a relief. It feels so good to have this intimacy and connectedness to oneself. And because it's so easy to lose touch, to relinquish oneself. And so here the Buddha is saying that don't do that. Or if you do, then come back and find yourself again. And then, of course, the process continues because as we get, you know, the agitation drops away and we feel connected and intimate, and you continue that process of settling, then at some point, any kind of movement of the mind of thinking about yourself in any kind of way, identifying yourself as being someone, also falls away. And the kind of intimacy of finding oneself paradoxically also comes along with once again kind of losing oneself. But this time, losing oneself is something that feels very, very true and connected and alive and very free. And rather than losing ourselves and becoming disconnected, now there's a losing of the self, losing of self-identification, self-consciousness, and there is, just feels like one of the, really the best. So there's kind of three stages of having lost oneself, finding oneself in a certain kind of way, and then not necessarily losing oneself. Sometimes in Buddhism we talk about forgetting the self, feeling so at home, so connected, so at ease, so peaceful, that there's no need for any kind of self-conscious reflection or self-conscious concern. And that's a phenomenal thing to do if you have any sense of people, of how some people have are very much kind of wrapped up in certain kind of self-preoccupations. Sometimes a self-preoccupation takes the form of fear, conditioned by life situations to always be afraid. And being afraid means that there's some kind of self-consciousness operating, maybe a necessary one, given what some people live. But to be able to come to a place where that falls away and there's no more fear, no more self, that kind of self-consciousness, is a great thing. It's a blessing to have that and to discover what's deeper that's going on for us. So the teachings in Buddhism of not self are, if it's just taught by itself all alone, then it can be taken to be that somehow you don't count, you're not supposed to exist somehow, that you're supposed to have no concern about yourself. But Buddhism offers kind of a developmental model for spiritual growth or psychological growth. And the teachings are specific for different stages along that developmental model. So for people who have lost themselves, have sold themselves to slavery, we might talk about finding oneself. Once they found themselves, we might talk about a process of forgetting oneself. When one has forgotten oneself in this deeper intimacy, then we might talk about experience a sense of being alive without any self-referencing. And so we might talk about an experience of having not self, no self there. Make some sense? So this process of, so the self, in terms of having, the self has agency that you should do something, you can do something, is a very important part of early Buddhism. And it's also part of this developmental stages. There is a time in practice when we engage in a practice that we do, and other times we kind of get out of the way and let the practice do us. And so where you are in that process, you know, it varies from day to day and month to month or year to year and different situations. All along, so what I want to talk about today actually is refuge. Very important concept in Buddhism, going for refuge. And the word for refuge is a sadhana, and it can mean like going for protection or going for support. And it's probably the most central or core ritual in Buddhism that I know of. Almost all kinds of ceremonies, all kinds of events that Buddhists will go to in Thailand and Burma, they'll chant what's called the refuges. And the reason why it's a great support, or kind of a protection, is that it protects us, it's meant to protect us from fear. If you take these things as your protection, these things as your refuge, as your shelter, then you have no reason, you won't feel afraid anymore. They use very dramatic language to talk about this. They say that fear will be slain, the slaying of fear. And these three refuges are refuge in the Buddha, refuge in the Dharma, and refuge in the Sangha. But the way the chanting of this ritual is done, the words are Buddham Saranam Gacchami. Buddha is Buddha. Saranam means the refuge, and Gacchami means to walk. And usually when we translate it into English, we say, I go for refuge to the Buddha. But literally it's saying, I walk for refuge to the Buddha. And what I like about this, the word walking, is that we bring all of ourselves into these refuges, into these sacred things of Buddhism. All of us goes together. And it's also something we do. We walk is something we choose to do, something we do for ourselves. We take responsibility for the walking. And so sometimes the idea of refuge can seem passive, that I passively give myself up, so something else is going to take care of me. But the idea is we step into something out of choice. So much so that in the Theravada tradition, Buddhism, there's sometimes said to be a fourth refuge. And that fourth refuge is the self, is oneself. And so for all the teaching that that Buddhism might have about not self, at the same time it says, you can take refuge in yourself, or you can become your own refuge. You make yourself a refuge for yourself. You make yourself a place that where you can live in the world with some certain kind of safety without fear. To add to the great challenge or the profundity of this idea of refuge, walking for refuge, going for refuge, when a person really understands what this Buddhist concept or movement is of refuge, it's said that a person will no longer have any reason to complain. Isn't that phenomenal? So many of you now will not be interested in going for refuge. Because you don't, you know, it's a little bit too much to imagine giving up complaining. But there's no more reason to complain if we go for refuge. And so what is this refuge? What is it, I think, what is the refuge in self? What is refuge in Buddha, Dharma, Sangha? What is this thing we choose to walk into? It's an intentional act. It's a choice. And in doing so, it's meant to be something that that's done with consideration and care. So one of the ways of understanding this refuge, the most conventional way, is that we take refuge in the Buddha, means the historical person who discovered these truths. We take refuge in the Dharma, we take refuge in the teachings and practices and realizations that the Buddha came up with. We take refuge in the Sangha, it's the people who have been a witness to the realizations, to the liberation. But the conventional doesn't go very deep. The idea is that we find the refuge in ourselves, not outside of ourselves. And when people go for refuge in a deep way, inner way, the idea is that something inside of us, we discover and know something inside of us that is mirrored or seen or resonates with what the Buddha means or what the Dharma means or what the Sangha means. And this idea that we have something in our hearts, we have something within, that where the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha is found in us. It's in our own minds that we find the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, not outside of us. And so what is that? So it said that when we take refuge in the Buddha, when we find safety in the Buddha, or support in the Buddha, protection, what we're taking a refuge in is not the Buddha as a historical person, but the Buddha's awakening. The degree to which the Buddha set his heart, set his mind free. That it's possible to go through the world without becoming a slave to anything. Without taking refuge in money or jobs or status or homes or objects or our personality or our opinions. All these things that many people, or in banks, or all kinds of things that people put their trust in, put their refuge in. And Buddha says those things are not a reliable refuge, not a place really of safety. But the place of safety is to be able to find a place where the heart can sing. The heart can be happy in a way where it doesn't easily get agitated or caught or constricted or limited by forces like fear and greed and hatred and delusion. And that's a phenomenal thing to discover, a place inside, a way of being, where we're not contracted or caught. And in Buddhism, that's said to be the greatest wealth. The best thing that you can ever experience for yourself is a heart that's set free, that's at home in itself. And so when we talk about the Buddha's taking refuge in the Buddha, we're taking refuge in the Buddha's awakening, that he did this, and that possibility exists for us to do as well. And to the degree to which people through practice begin discovering that freedom, inner freedom, and get a sense, get a taste of what that's like, then we have something inside of us that's the Buddha. We have inside us that mirrors or resonates with the Buddha. And to trust that, to value that, to orient our lives around that, so that that becomes central. So rather than being devoted towards complaining, being devoted towards our self-centeredness, being devoted towards our, you know, ways in which we become slaves to so much in the world, the idea is that we become devoted to our freedom. And if we're devoted to our freedom, then we say in Buddhism that we've taken refuge in awakening in the Buddha. To take refuge in the Dharma is to take refuge in the teachings of the Buddha, the practices that he taught, and the realizations that come from those practices. But to do those practices, again, is not a passive thing, but we have to do our part. And there's a wonderful kind of mutuality or wonderful exchange or wonderful process of practice where there's like two sides of it. There's a side of what we have to do and the side of what we receive as a result of doing those things. So it's not all about us doing something, because then it's just self-centered. But it's not all about receiving something, because then it's also just kind of maybe self-centered. It's just you get something. But this combination of we offer ourselves, we do something, we practice, but then we make room in our hearts and our minds to allow something to happen and to receive something that happens as a result of what we've done. So, for example, we might decide to meditate, and so we sit down and take a comfortable, upright posture, and we practice then sitting down and letting go of our preoccupations, maybe by staying with the breathing. That can take a lot of work. First to sit down and stay seated and not get up and run away. It can take a lot of work to sit there and even know that you're distracted, because some people are so distracted they don't know they're distracted. And then slowly kind of begin to show up and be present, and then keep letting go of these things. It's a lot of work. But then at the same time, as we do this, to begin opening ourselves to receive an inner transformation that can happen when we make space to be here and present. We do the work to try to be present, and as we become present, something begins to emerge. We begin to relax. We begin to soften. We begin to listen to the deeper impulses and voices inside of us, the deeper feelings. And something begins to work through us. That is not that, you know, we can't say I'm doing it, but what I did is I set up the conditions for it. So it turns out a lot of what Buddhist practice is about is creating ideal conditions for something that's within us to begin to emerge that supports us, that guides us. And a lot of what that supports us and guides us is this heart, mind, which is uncontracted, unconstricted, that's not afraid, that's not angry, that's not caught up in its desires. That's a wonderful reference point for wisdom. It's a wonderful reference point for living a fulfilled and purposeful life, because it's a life that's free. So to take refuge in the Dharma is to take refuge in the fact that we can commit ourselves to a practice, and as we do this practice, we're going to be supported by the practice. It's said in Buddhism that those who live the Dharma are protected by the Dharma. Those who live by the practice are protected by the practice. And then to take refuge in the Sangha, on one hand, it means taking refuge in the support of the other people who practice. And I can say with great enthusiasm that I could not have practiced as much as I've done for all these decades without having communities of people around me who practiced as well. I was inspired by them, supported by them, guided by them, mirrored by them, challenged by them, irritated by them. And in the process of being irritated, I got to look at myself and, you know, work things out. And it's really great to have, you know, I think it's almost impossible to practice without some connection to communities of other people who are practicing as well, if you want to go really far in the practice. So conventionally, it kind of means that you get the support of people who practice. A little bit more deeply, it means that we recognize that there are people who are really tasted the fruit of realization, tasted the fruit of some kind of inner freedom. And so they serve as examples for us of what we can do. But the inner refuge, the deeper refuge in ourselves, doesn't mean that we take refuge in others, we find protection from others, but more profoundly, it means that we become a refuge for others. We become someone who is safe for others to be with. We become someone who other people can feel as supportive. So that it comes out of the refuge in Sangha is something that comes out of us as an offering to others. And there's something very, very protective for ourselves to be able to have a heart that's so open that it's available to support others or to be concerned with others or help others. And so we find the refuge in Sangha in ourselves, in what we offer, how we feel connected in this mutual, interactive, interrelated world that we find ourselves in. So this movement of this kind of... So the idea of going for refuge, for some people, is the core kind of sacred kind of direction or orientation or purpose or understanding which Buddhist practice centers around. So it's a much, much more than, you know, just practicing meditation. It's much more than just practicing mindfulness. It puts the mindfulness and meditation into a much bigger and wider supportive context. And it's a context where that's bigger than oneself. And I once read a book that quoted a conversation with one of the great physicists who came up with the theorems of thermodynamics. Maybe it was, I forget who it was, but in the 1800s. And so he came up with these great theorems that we still use. And someone said, where did they come from? How did you come up with these great things? And he said, something inside of me, which is not myself, came up with them. I thought that was a great answer. Something inside of me which is not myself. Rather than taking credit for them, that the place where we're kind of, the place in our minds which we associate, this is who I am, our conscious part of our mind perhaps, he could never have come up with it. But it came, bubbled up from his subconscious and some bigger part of his mind. And this idea of not taking credit for it, this idea of not associating with his self, but at the same time not saying it didn't come from the sky, you know, it came from within him, but it's some bigger process where he doesn't have the self-identification with. I think taking refuge in the Dharma is taking refuge in something inside of you that's very supportive and helpful for you, that it's bigger or more broad than anything, any possible way that you can identify, this is who I am. There are resources, there's understanding, there's wisdom, there's intuitions within us that are here ready to support us if we do this movement to trust or to orient our life around the Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, or something equivalent to that. So it doesn't require believing in Buddha, Dharma, Sangha as some kind of supernatural or super transcendent realities that are out there. They exist in our own hearts. And our own minds and hearts are tremendously capable of bringing us to healing, to bringing us to freedom, to bringing us into harmony with this world, if we give it the chance. So to take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, and refuge in ourself. Refuge in ourself because we're important. We count. Don't give yourself away. Don't lose yourself to become a slave of something else. Sometimes the Buddha said, don't depend on other people. Discover the freedom here. And if you do this freedom, you won't be self-centered. It won't be a conceited, self-absorbed movement, because that movement of self-centeredness falls away as we discover something inside of us that's bigger than any concept of self we have. And this beautiful emergence of the Dharma within us. So I'll end with one more quote from the Buddha. He talks about refuge. He says, make a refuge of yourself. So make yourself as something you can, that a place of safety. Make yourself something that, that supports you. Make a refuge of yourself. Make a refuge of the, and make a refuge of yourself. Make nothing else your refuge. And then he says, make the Dharma your refuge. Make nothing else your refuge. And since, you know, it's kind of a strange statement, right? He says, only do A, and then he says, only do B. it gets reconciled if you see that the self and the Dharma are the same thing. Make a refuge of yourself, nothing else. Make a refuge in the Dharma, nothing else. The self and the Dharma at some point can become the one. The Dharma is not something outside of you. It's not something you read in books. It's not something that you hear in Dharma talks like this one. But it's something that can live in you and something that you can become. So it's not something you think about or some principles or teachings you have, but it becomes as an embodiment. It becomes how you live your life. And the idea of living our life being the our life becomes the Dharma lived, is one of the great possibilities of life. So make yourself a refuge. Make yourself a refuge. And if you do that well, then you yourself will kind of disappear and you will become the Dharma. Or as they say in Zen, when you are you, Zen is Zen. When you are you, the Dharma is the Dharma. So there's this kind of wonderful kind of mixed message in Buddhism that you can take refuge in yourself, and then if you do that, then you get to lose yourself in a wonderful way. Then you become a real refuge, a real place of safety. So I offer you that near, near the midpoint of the winter. We get ready for the big turning that happens on Wednesday into a new life, a new beginning of a year with a solstice. And perhaps I thought it was a good time to consider and reflect on this kind of core Buddhist, core aspect of Buddhism that people have been finding nourishing for 2,500 years. Refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha. So we have some time. If any of you would like to ask any questions or comments, or would like to make some testimonial about what it means for you to go for refuge in Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, we'd be lovely to hear from some of you.
Thank you, Gil. Two things you said really kind of surprised me, but I don't know why, but they were something new for me. And one was when you talked about you didn't say find a place, but you mentioned that within us there's a place where our heart sings. And that's a promise. I've just had little glimpses of that. But imagine that we can find within ourselves a place where our heart sings. And the other, when you talked about the person who was working with thermodynamics or something like that, who said, something within myself that is not myself. That's nice to welcome that. And I think the more I deepen my practice, there are new places within myself that is a refuge.
Yes. I'm delighted that those particular parts of the talk were meaningful for you. And so maybe you understand also that what you can do, the part that you have agency over, is you can welcome the parts that you don't, that are deeper, fuller. So you have your role to play, and part of that is to trust it and to open to it in a healthy way, appropriate way.
And that's possible too within my relationships, that when somebody irritates me, that I can know that behind that is something beautiful.
Yes, absolutely. In you and in them. And so, you know, your responsibility when you're irritated, if you orient your life around the refuges, then if you get irritated, your role, your job, is to go behind that to find out what's deeper, find the freedom that's there, because you lost your freedom in the irritation.
Absolutely.
You can still disagree with what's going on.
Oh, thank you.
But you don't have to be irritated.
Yeah.
Can you move, Mary? Can someone pass the mic?
One of the ways that it's coming up a lot in relationship is sharing with partners, sharing with friends and colleagues, this idea that each moment is a neutral moment, that how I choose to speak into it, and so what's my intention, and then is the speech really positive? Mm-hmm. Does each word by itself have some kind of tone that feels like love, that sounds like it and feels like it? So I've been really paying attention. Does it really feel like that coming from myself? And like the breath going, oh, it feels a little off, a little more urgent or pleading or maybe a little judgment. And then so bringing it back so it feels like loving.
Nice.
And in the moment versus a story of something from a past issue or in the future. And so kind of really being present to relating to the person with what their experience is in the current moment. And so that's just been a real gift.
Nice.
To
nice. Very
people.
Nice. And part of this is one possibility is to, when we're in relationship and talking with people, to talk in such a way that opens to possibilities, to something to happen, rather than talk in ways that close possibilities. If we're too definitive or too opinionated or something, you know, it's like less options, less possibilities. But you know, how can we talk so that the other person we talk to has an opportunity to present something new, or something new can come out of us? What do they think? What's going on? So speech which creates a mutual openness rather than one that creates mutual division.
I had a really big surgery about 8 months ago, and as I was in the hospital, like about to go into the surgery, I kept repeating the three refuges to myself. Uh-huh. And it was the only, and it really took away any fear that I had, and I felt complete peace and freedom, and I haven't felt that way since that moment.
Wow, pretty cool. Thank you. And Liz?
One of the ways that I really connect with this and with some other teachings is through chanting. And I'm wondering if I can share that and invite others to join if they know that short.
Should we chant it all together?
Yeah, would that be okay?
Yeah, great, let's do it.
I don't need this, do I?
So those of you who know the chant, the refuges in Pali, we can chant it together. Those of you who don't know it, maybe if you've never heard it even, just listen along. And as you listen, you can reflect that what we're going to chant has been chanted for 2,500 years by millions and millions of people. And somewhere out in the world, many people are chanting it right now. And, you know, in other places, in Thailand and Burma, and it's just it's very common for Buddhists to do it. And and the first time I heard someone chant it was in 1975 or so, and I thought it was that it was not quite exactly the same way we're going to chant it, but it was the same, in a different tone or something. And but I thought it was primordial. I felt like the bowels of the earth were coming up. And I was like so moved by it. So if you've never heard it before, just kind of listen along. So what we're going to do is chant. We're going to chant first the salutation to the Buddha. Yes? So first we kind of evoke the Buddha by kind of saying, in this ancient language, we say, homage to the Buddha, the fully enlightened Buddha, the worthy one, the perfected one, something like that. And then after evoking the Buddha, then we do the refuges, and the refuges are Buddha Dharma Sangha and Buddham Saranam Gacchami, means to walk. And then we do it a second time, and then we say in this ancient language, for a second time, dutiyampi. And then we do it a third time, and because in the ritual idea is that you don't really mean it until you say it three times. It takes a while to get into it. So the third time is tatiyampi. Okay, so if you want to start it, then we'll follow along with you.
We do the first part a little differently.
But
in terms of the cadence.
I'll turn this off so we can try to follow you. But then maybe you want to use the mic if we're going to follow you.
Okay.
Is it more or less standard?
Yeah.
More or less standard?
More or less.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. I'll start that part over, sorry. I've lost it. Okay. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
One of the things I like about the chanting is that my chest begins to vibrate. And when my chest begins to vibrate, it's, for me, it kind of feels like I'm touching into that place inside, which is not me. I'm being reminded of this, something is much more good, there's much more going on in here than meets the eye. My little eye that kind of is concerned with me, myself, and mine. And there's vast, vast potential, vast beauty, vast wisdom that's found within, if we can open to it and allow for it, and let it grow, move through us. So may you become a refuge for yourself. And in doing so, it's my sincere hope that all of us then become a refuge for each other as well. May we each be a support for each other in this life. Thank you.